Good Monday afternoon, and welcome to Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Eller. Today's special guest is specialist Garrett Culbertson with Bravo Company. And now coming to you live from Sharp Facets Gallery, here is your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We are here with Garrett Culbertson, and yes, he is specialist Garrett Culbertson. We have a great week planned this week. We're going to be doing veterans, veterans, and more veterans because Veterans Day is Friday, and I just decided it would be an excellent opportunity to take advantage of that. Bravo Company, of course, last year was in Iraq, and we are going to be talking about his experiences. He really has an interesting story to tell, and without further ado, I want to welcome Garrett Culbertson, Specialist Garrett Culbertson. How are you doing today, Garrett?
Very good. Glad to be here.
Glad for you to be here, too. And, of course, you have grown up in Greenwood. And before I go any further, I want to say one thing. Thank you. Thank you for your service to our country. We really appreciate it a lot.
It's always good to hear it from someone.
It is good to hear it. And, you know, I guess that would be one thing that you would tell people. Don't be shy about saying it, right?
Not at all. Don't be shy.
You have really been had quite some experiences over there in Iraq. Now, first off, just tell us exactly what you were doing when you were in Iraq.
Well, while I was in Iraq with Bravo Company of the 151st Signal Battalion, I served as the company public affairs officer and unit historian. My job was to travel around the country with the command staff, visit soldiers around the country, and record our story through written reports, photographs, videos, and then translate the story so it's understandable for the current military presence, the Iraqi locals, and the civilians back home.
So that should have given you a very interesting perspective, being able to travel like that.
It was. It kept me very busy, made the year go by faster to always be on the move. It was very rewarding to see the understanding of the people, but also just to be able to see the sights of Iraq and to see all the biblical history that happened there.
Wow. Well, that is great. But what made you want to go into the National Guard? How did you get involved from that standpoint?
Well, I've wanted to be a soldier since the age of four, I guess mainly from listening to the war stories from my grandfathers, one in the Army, one in the Marines, also from my father serving in the Navy. I've just always had this sense of pride in the military, sense of honor in serving your country, and I wanted my part in that. And in high school, I did 4 years of JROTC, and that was really just to satisfy my craving until I could graduate.
And you graduated from Greenwood High?
Yes, ma'am.
That's right. So, and when did you graduate? You look awful young, Garrett. I'm sorry.
I graduated in 2007.
2007. So you haven't been out for very long. And then you signed up for the National Guard. You were trained as a, you were telling me about, how were you trained to do what?
I was trained as a network node operator maintainer. Basically, all of the communications come to me, and then I disperse them.
Okay. You're kind of like a hub.
Yes, exactly. I am the network hub. Yes.
The network hub. All right. I understand that since we deal with that all the time. But how did you find it when you went over there?
Very hot.
Very hot.
Yeah. It was kind of a shock. You know, I read a lot of books, heard from a lot of other veterans what to expect. But you can prepare yourself all you want to. But when you get that 140-degree punch in the face when you step off the plane, there's really not much to prepare you for it. I mean, everything's new. Everything's different. Things move slower. There's less colors. Everything smells funny. It is an entirely different world.
You were telling me it smelled a lot. You smelled a lot of oil.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of fumes in the air. You're never more than just a few miles away from burning oil. All the sludge running off, and there's constantly fumes in the air. Not a lot of good septic systems over there either. So in that kind of heat, I mean, there's just naturally some pretty stinky air floating around.
I like one of the stories you told me before we started here about being on a porta potty.
Yeah, it was when we first got there in August of 2010. Most days in the midday, it was getting in the high 130, sometimes as high as 140. And this was the first and last time I ever took a seat in a porta potty. And upon making contact and applying weight, the seat just began to give way due to the plastic starting to melt, and it just couldn't hold me up. And that was, you know, when you're in the position and ready to do your business, it makes it kind of hard to regain your balance and get back up.
Did any of the plastic stick to your butt?
No, it wasn't quite that liquefied yet. It just wasn't ready for my weight.
Well, I'm sure that made for an interesting part of your historical write-ups.
Yeah. Well, actually, that kind of got omitted most of the time.
Wow. Now, of course, the sand has to be another tremendous. Do you ever get it out of your system when you're dealing with this day in and day out?
Not really. I've been home for several months, and I still wash my uniforms and get sand out of the pockets. I mean, it's something. The sand there is so fine. It's almost like moon dust. It's such a fine sand that the slightest wind picks it up and sends it for miles. I mean, even though the food is prepared indoors, there's still a constant grit in your food. You just learn to deal with, I guess. After a while, you don't notice it. The water, you just kind of just don't notice it. So when I came home and went out to eat, I mean, it was like
the best food
I've ever had. I mean, it just all of a sudden there's no texture to it, and it was, you know, you constantly have to clean your weapon. Sand gets in everything, and there's no way to keep it out.
Now, you were telling me about the temperature, speaking of a weapon, that you had to wear gloves all the time because it got too hot to hold.
Yes, your weapon is always with you no matter where you go, so it always being slung on your back or across your chest. Just when you take a simple 100-yard walk in that sun, by the time you get where you're going, your weapon's too hot to grab with your hand and take it off. I mean, it just, you know, your weapon is mainly metal, so it's sitting in, you know, a sun that's projecting over 130-degree heat. It'll burn your hand just touching it.
And what type of your uniforms? You were telling us the amount of weight and everything that it had. Tell us a little bit about how much weight, how much you weighed, how much the weight of all that you wore.
Well, your basic uniform, just the pants, boots, and shirt, that weighs about 9 pounds just itself. But when I would travel, which I did very frequently, usually about once a week, that would then require body armor, your helmet, weapon, and then your standard combat load, which is 210 rounds, 7 magazines of ammunition. And then you've also got all your other equipment pouches, medical pouches, and then your backpack. I weighed about 155, and then when I got everything on, I weighed about 230.
And you were hauling that around with you?
Everywhere.
Wow. That had to be you. I mean, you had to be exhausted at the end of the day.
Yes, there were days when it was just hard just to stand up. I mean, it was a constant physical and mental drain to just have that required of you every day.
Well, we are here with Specialist Garrett Culberson. He had the fortunate job of being able to travel around and meet a lot of people, talk to the troops and everything. When we come back, we're going to talk more about some of his experiences that he had over there, what he saw that was good, what he saw maybe that wasn't good, and his feelings about being over there. So don't you go away. If you've got a question, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We'll be back in just one moment.
Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Monday, happy day.
Welcome back to Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Eller. Now coming to you live from Sharp Facets Gallery, here is your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We are here with Specialist Garrett Culberson. He is with the Bravo Company right here in, actually in Hodges, I guess we should actually say, Bravo Company 151. He went to Iraq a year ago, back in August, and was there 11 months. He's got some interesting experiences to talk about with us, and I'm ready to get started about talking about them. Hey, if you've got a question for him, give us a call, 229-7984. But before we go any further with that, what are you doing now that you're back here in the good old USA?
Well, took a couple of months off just for pure vacation. It was very nice, and now I'm actually attending school at Piedmont Technical College, getting a business degree there. And once I get done with that, I'll be heading off to Southeastern Seminary.
Southeastern Seminary. And what do you want to do someday, Garrett?
It wasn't my idea, but my life calling is actually to move to New Zealand and to plant a church there. I'm very uncomfortable with that idea, and that's how I know it's God's idea and not mine.
Have you had any discussions about this? Are you sure we can't do this here in the USA?
I've tried, but the only answer I get is I think they got it handled here. So.
They got it handled here.
Yeah.
So you're going to be going to New Zealand. Wow. Okay. Well, the Spirit is definitely going to New Zealand here. I think that's terrific. And you said you were telling me New Zealand needs they're so diverse.
Yeah, New Zealand has a huge emphasis on cultural diversity. They're very welcoming of all different types of cultures and welcoming in so many different cultures. They've just kind of lost sight of religion completely. They welcome in so many different ways of life that religion has just kind of lost their attention. The country is full of people who are hungry for just some kind of truth. They're starving for something they can believe in.
Absolutely. And Gracie is sitting up on that one. Folks, when you see the video, you'll see Gracie. She's taking center stage here today. All right. Well, Garrett, now to talk about the people going to Iraq, what did you find of the people that are in Iraq? Are we in the right place? Should we be there?
I think we definitely were in the right to go and to help these people. I learned so much about them and the fact that they're just people. You know, these people were under an oppressor for so long, they just wanted a future for their country, just like we did when we were under the British. And, I mean, it made me feel a lot better about being there to serve them when I could think about them in that sense that several years ago when the British were occupying us, we went through the exact same thing.
So we are doing a good thing by being there.
We are. We've, for so many years, these people never had to make a decision because Saddam made all of them. So they were being oppressed by him. We came and removed him. And after that, it was like they were handed a country and said, here, run it. And they had no clue what to do. So by being there for all these years, teaching them and instructing them, they now not only have their own lives to run, but they know how to do it.
Now, how are they feeling about the fact that we're going to be leaving?
For the most part, I think they're ready for their opportunity to do it. They're very afraid to do it. I mean, it's just like any kid being out of the house on his own for the first time. They're very afraid of what will happen. And, I mean, they're nervous. The biggest fear that I've heard from them is that as soon as we leave, someone else will come in and take them over.
What do you think about that?
I think they'll be ready for it. They've been well supplied and well trained. I think they'll be able to handle it. It's just a matter that they need to have confidence in the training that they receive, their equipment, and the leaders that we've put in place.
Okay. Thank you, Gracie, for helping me out with the conversation here today. now, you said that you had quite a conversation with a general over there in Baghdad, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us a little bit about that conversation.
I was in Saddam's Afal Palace, which is where the United States Forces headquarters was in Baghdad, and there's Iraqi generals that work there too, just so they can kind of communicate and work with the United States generals. And I was actually there for a change of command ceremony, and while I was there, I ran into what the equivalent was of a 3-star general in the Iraqi army, and got to have a very long conversation with him and talk about how his people view the war, how he views it, what their soldiers are feeling. And what I got from him is they're excited for their chance to try this on their own, but the people of Iraq are overall pretty scared of what's going to happen when we're gone. They're very nervous of, like I said, the fact of someone else coming in and taking over. The military is scared of not having the United States security blanket there that they've had for the past several years throughout the training and now where they're actually starting to plan and execute their own missions.
Do you think that we talked a little bit about this, you know, part of what Bravo Company did was to help hook them up to the Internet and bring them into the 21st century. What do you think will happen? Do you think that, you know, one of my concerns would be they're getting all this intel and information to be able to see what the world's really like when the insurgents come in? Will that be the first thing that they try to knock out?
Well, my unit was responsible for teaching the Iraqi army the modern way of communicating in the battlefield, and that's thus been taken and implemented in the villages, and, you know, they've learned a lot about installation of wires. A lot of power has been brought to villages that previously didn't have any. I think the insurgents' main goal is really to just break hope and break the spirit of the Iraqi people, because if you can break their motivation to try, you really don't have to destroy much else.
Now, what about the fact of us announcing that we'll be out of there by the end of the year? What do you personally think about it?
I think that was a boo-boo.
That was a boo-boo, okay.
Yeah, when the announcement was made that we were packing up and leaving, that week the attacks increased greatly across the entire country. And then when the announcement was made after that the Iraqi government was asking us to stay even longer, the attacks increased yet again. It's the insurgents' way of trying to put in their two cents. And as long as the insurgents see us leaving, whether or not they made us do it, to them it's a victory just because we're leaving. So when they see us packing up and putting live soldiers on planes and leaving, they see that as a victory for themselves. It empowers them, it motivates them, and they just get a lot more daring with their attacks.
You were telling me that you had a lot more attacks on your where you were located,
mm-hmm.
and went from like one a month to
several a week.
Several a mm-hmm. week. That has to be draining right there as a soldier to deal with that day in and or week in and week out.
It's very draining because the majority of the attacks that they do is rocket and mortar attacks. We call them indirect fire attacks. They're not really aiming at something specific. They're just lobbing explosives into the base, hoping to hit something. And the fact that, you know, when that happens, we're not allowed to leave the base to go get them. We have to wait for everything to calm down, and then measures are taken. But at the time, I mean, it's a very mentally draining feeling because you feel kind of like fish in a barrel because you're stuck inside this, you know, fenced-in compound, and you just have to sit there and wait for them to stop.
What is the mental attitude of so many of the soldiers over there, the guys and the gals?
Can we leave yet?
Can we leave yet?
This has been going on for a while, and I think, yeah, behind it all, they know what we're doing is good, but the majority of the soldiers I ran into there were on their second and third, even some of them their fourth deployment to Iraq.
Fourth deployment.
Yeah, for the most part, they're just ready to come home.
And what did they feel? What was the feeling when they heard that the United States would be out by the end of the year?
It was very mixed. I could say half of them were, hallelujah, it's time. The other half was, yeah, I'll believe it when I get home.
So there isn't 100% belief that it was really going to happen.
No, not really. I guess that 50%, I guess they were banking on that attacks would increase so much that we would get slowed down.
We would get slowed down.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I just find that all of this is very fascinating. So many of our listeners have no idea about how this all works. Now, what else did you do while you were there? Did you work with school children and this type of thing?
My unit was able to collect school supplies and clothing and such that would be distributed to the villages. Now, my unit, because of their role in the infrastructure, were not able to leave the base to go distribute them. But I mean, it was well known by the Iraqi people who was distributing and who provided these things. My unit just didn't have the adequate security to go out to the villages ourselves. And plus, I mean, providing constant communication to all of Iraq, that's a pretty day and night busy job.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, our people were pretty much stuck to their desks.
Gracie really likes you. Gracie, go lay down. Go lay down over there, please. Go lay down. Thank you. All right. Well, we are here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We are talking with Garrett Culberson, and Gracie really likes him, too. You'll see it in the video on YouTube when we post this. But just speaking about being there and everything, what other things can you tell us about the day-to-day living over there?
It is one of the most emotionally, physically, and spiritually draining things I've ever been through. And honestly, I do not see any way that a civilian who has never been will understand, and that's something people just need to accept and just be thankful that someone else did it. It is absolutely very draining because every day, you know, after a couple months, you just have to reach down and find something within you that can make you go another day. But things between the heat, the sand, the, you know, little things. Like one of the things I missed the most was just being able to get a bottle of cheer wine when I wanted. I mean, that stuff like that's just not available over there. And everyone is so focused on just surviving that there's a very large lack of accountability with each other. So a lot of times you can feel very alone even though you're there with thousands of other soldiers.
Yeah. It has to be mentally, the issue has to be really tough. Now, when we come back after the news, we're going to talk some more with Garrett about his experiences over there, what it's like. He had the, I would say, the great job, if one was going to have a job over there, the great job of being able to travel around, see lots of the troops, and be the historian for his unit. So I think that's terrific. When we come back, we're going to talk more about that. Do want to tell you right now, the price of gold is up, 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 folks. I tell you what, if you are in the market to sell, you should come see us today. Who knows what's going to happen tomorrow, but today, gold is trading at $1,782. Silver is at $3,463. You know we pay the most here, and that's because we buy your jewelry. We don't just buy the gold. We buy the diamonds. We buy the silver. We buy all of it right here at Sharp Facets Gallery. So come see us today. If you've got a question, give us a call. 229-6613. That's 229-6613. News is up. We'll be back.
What does WLMA stand for? Well, it stands for Wow, Let's Meet Again, right here on 1350 AM, Greenwood and the Lakelands News Talk radio station.
Monday, happy days.
Welcome back to Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Eller. Now coming to you live from Sharp Facets Gallery, here is your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We are here with Specialist Garrett Andrew Culberson. He is currently attending Piedmont Tech to obtain a business degree. He is in the Bravo company that was over there in Iraq last year. And, of course, all week long we're going to be discussing veterans and issues associated with veterans right here on Meet Me at the Diner. Since Friday is Veterans Day, I wanted to do a special tribute to all our veterans here. And to have Garrett here today is really a treasure because he's got inside experience to what was happening. Now, Garrett, you know, one of the things I know that has to be difficult is how about the communication? You talked about putting in communication lines and everything over there. How was communication between here and over there in Iraq?
It was pretty regular. You know, we have emails, which is pretty constant, and phone calls. And also Skype, which is, I think, one of the greatest things to ever happen to the modern soldier since the gun.
Gun probably would be number one.
Probably. Skype is in a close second. But, yeah, Skype is a wonderful, free, face-to-face protocol used online where you can do a video phone call with people across the world. Now, the internet connection over there is not fantastic. There's just such a huge distance, it just can't be that great. You know, people are blurry, constantly have to repeat yourself, calls are dropped. But it's enough to get you through another day.
And what about you were telling me how much a handwritten letter though means?
Oh, it's words can't describe it. You know, Skype is great, phone calls are great, emails are great. They'll get you through the day, but a handwritten letter or a care package, that can fuel you for weeks.
What was the favorite thing that you like to get in your care package?
Oh, my goodness. Every now and then, my mom and my girlfriend would slip a bottle of Cheerwine into my care packages, and that, on days when I could not go another day, when I could open a cold Cheerwine, and that sweet, cherry, bubbly goodness would just take me home, and there were no worries at that time.
You said you don't realize the things that you'll miss until you're in that situation, right?
Right. It's, you know, I knew I would miss my family, and I would miss being able to go where I want and eat the food I want, but after several months, you know, and Iraq is so dirty, you can't walk around barefoot, you know, so you're starting to miss things like just the feel of my kitchen floor under my bare feet, the ability to have a Cheerwine whenever I want it. I mean, there's such small things that are monumental whenever you have no way of getting them.
I need to ask you, since Cheerwine was so near and dear to you, did you ever share it?
On rare occasions. Every now and then, when it was one of my very close friend's birthday, I would, you know, put a bow on a bottle of Cheerwine and give it to him. And it was nice to be able to share that goodness with someone else and see them get the same joy from it that I got.
I guess we could say Cheerwine was like a fine bottle of wine.
It was. It was. Yeah, if wine was made of gold, I think that would be it.
That would be it. All right. Well, now tell us about, like, you were telling me that, you know, we're going to be getting involved with the Civil Air Patrol. We're going to try to work out so that we can work out a way to send care packages over there. One of the gals that I know who had two sons over there at one point said that the guy said one of the most important things that kept him going was care packages. And it doesn't have to be for mom and dad or a family. It's just the idea of a care package.
Yeah, our unit got care packages all the time from people we didn't know, whether they're Boy Scout troops, churches, just random people who just got our unit's name and got an address. But, man, that was like a trip to Walmart for us when we would get a care package full of all kinds of goodies from home that otherwise we'd have no way of getting. And our unit would just open them, and we'd just get to rummage through them. I mean, it was like Christmas for us.
You don't realize it, do you?
You really don't. To get a thing of Kool-Aid powder for Christmas at home, you would think, okay, you don't love me. But over there, to get Kool-Aid powder, I mean, it could bring a tear to your eye.
That really comes close to your heart, and we need to get very big into this and finding out how we can do this, because I had not heard this, but, you know, I can understand how it would be that important.
It's more so the thought of someone thinking of you enough to give their time and their money to send you something, not so much what they're sending. I mean, it could be tube socks and tighty-whities, but, I mean, that the thought of you thinking of them so far away, because a lot of times you feel forgotten, because when you're a part of something so massive, you can feel like such a small part. It's easy to feel alone and forgotten.
It kind of be like being an ant, wouldn't it?
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, when you think about it that way. So what you would urge our listeners to do?
Well, there's plenty of ways to find out how to get stuff over there. You've got organizations like the USO that you can reach online, your local VA even. I know there's one in Anderson, Greenville, Augusta. They're all over the place. And even you can look online to see what units around you have deployed, and every unit, when they deploy, leave a small group at home to manage the home front. And that group, they can give you the addresses of people over there, what their needs are. It's a lot easier than people think it is to give back to the soldiers.
And they need it, and they are defending us over there. So this is what we're going to be organizing with the Civil Air Patrol to see if we can't get some things over there. Now, Garrett, tell us a little bit about how you dealt with going all around. Any other interesting places that you visited or things that you can tell us while you were there?
There's a lot of stuff to see over there. I wouldn't recommend going over there by yourself as a tourist, but being that I had the opportunity to go over there with a loaded weapon, that made it a little easier to get around. But there's so much amazing stuff to see. I mean, just to see the way Saddam lived and his palaces, and the stuff he was able to buy himself by starving his people. I mean, it was amazing to see what really was going on in Iraq. And also, from someone who's currently works in a church and who's going to school to be a pastor, to see the biblical history that go there. Most people don't know, but around 80% of the Bible actually happened in Iraq. To be able to go see places like Babylon, and to be able to go to Nineveh, which is the city where Jonah was on his way to be able to go to Nineveh and just look around, I was actually able to go to Abraham's house from the Old Testament, a house built thousands of years ago, still standing, to be able to walk around his home city and stand in his house. I mean, it's amazing.
It's amazing that those things have survived, but I guess part of it would be, even though the heat and the cold, it's very, very dry, right?
It is very dry. Humidity over there on your average summer day between 0% and 5%.
So that would preserve something, that plus, I guess, the sand.
It does help. And believe it or not, Saddam was actually a big lover of history. So he actually did kind of have a soft spot for historical things. He did see to it that they were preserved somewhat.
Well, okay. Well, there's something we didn't know about Saddam Hussein. So as you look back on this experience, did you get to come home while you were over there during that year?
I did. Everyone in the unit got a two-week R&R, and they were able to come home. As far as when they came home, you know, it was just kind of pick what date you want and hope you get it.
Right.
Because we can only send so many home at a time. I picked January. My brother's birthday, came home and surprised him for his birthday. And also it was right in the middle of the deployment, so I could cut it in half, have a little break halfway through. I did not think about the cold, though. I came home, landed in Charlotte, and it was 12 degrees, and I had just left the low hundreds. And
How was that for you, Garrett?
I almost froze to death several times. Yeah, and I wasn't home 10 seconds and slipped on ice at the airport. And, you know, it was actually really embarrassing because I'd got off the plane, and it was really nice to feel this appreciation, but people in the airport started to clap for me as I got off the plane, and I slipped and fell on the ice.
So then you were embarrassed.
So then I was embarrassed, yeah.
But was it harder to get back on that plane to go back, though?
Not the second time.
No?
Yes, I would miss my family again. It was nice to be there with them, but... You know, I had a vacation. I was able to recharge. And the second time getting on the plane, I knew what I was going to. I knew what I would deal with. I knew how to handle it. And I knew how much time was left. I was ready to just get it done and come home again for good.
Well, then how about when you left the first time?
That, I would say, is one of the biggest roller coasters of emotion that I've ever been on. You know, the hours before, going through my cell phone for the last time, telling everyone bye. I'll see him in a year. It was very, very emotional. And also not really knowing. I mean, I read books. I talked to other veterans, but not really knowing what I was going to. It was very emotional. There was times on the plane, you know, when we flew over Iraq, I looked out the window onto the country, which I would soon be invading. You know, and I tried to muster up the love for these people that God has, but... I mean, it was hard to do. I actually had to go to the bathroom in the plane and just try to collect myself. And I remember while I was doing it, I looked in the mirror and I saw the flag that was pinned on my right shoulder. And it made me think about all the people at home that are depending on me to do a good job because they can't come do it themselves. And that really made me feel a lot better about it, but it still is a very frightening experience when you don't really know what you're going into.
Absolutely. But we are here with Garrett Culberson. He's telling us his experiences. He is a member of the Bravo Company. We're going to hear a word from our sponsors. When we come back, we'll be talking more. Hey, if you've got a question for Garrett, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
This year will be a simpler year, one fine gift to last a lifetime from Mother Earth with love, a diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72 Greenwood, 229-6276.
You're listening to Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Eller. Now coming to you live from Sharp Facets Gallery, here is your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We are here. Yes, I'm Ann Eller. We are here with Garrett Culberson. I do want to tell you, this Friday, you know, so many different businesses and restaurants and whatnot are doing specials for the veterans. We here at Sharp Facets are doing something special. We're giving an additional 11% off our already sale prices. So here's the deal to all veterans and active duty military. Just come on into Sharp Facets, wangle the best deal you can out of me, and then I'm going to give you an extra 11% off. And whether you put it on layaway or walk it out the door, doesn't matter. Whether it's a $50 purchase or a $1,000 purchase, doesn't matter. We will take an additional 11% off. So I think one of the things that's nice, Garrett, is the fact that our country is treating our veterans coming back so much different than when they came back from the Vietnam War.
I definitely agree with that. I know some of my fellow soldiers, you know, their fathers had been in the Vietnam War, and some of the older soldiers, they were in the Vietnam War. And it's a lot different reception from back then when you come home and get spit on to now, you know, to have as much as applause in the airport. I mean, it is a huge difference, and it makes soldiers feel so much better to go and do these things, and it makes them a lot more willing to do it, too.
Well, you know, since it is all volunteer, we don't have the draft anymore. You know, you need to have that good feeling. But what would you tell everybody out there about what is important from your perspective after being over there for a year?
I'd say the most important thing is to take advantage of the rights that we have defended. It's very demoralizing to a soldier to see the country he's defending just letting those rights go to waste. You know, watch what's going on in the government, take part in it, have a voice, use the rights that we've so, you know, sometimes greatly defended. You know, the young people need to do as best they can because one day they're going to be leading this country, so they need to pay attention to where it's going right now. Ask questions. Don't sit back and just be a number. be a part of it, have a voice, take part in what's going on. You know, inject your two cents, even make a difference. You know, take every opportunity you can to not just live in this country, but be a citizen of it.
Absolutely. And when it comes to our troops, we need to be standing up for them.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of soldiers who have the mentality, if you can't stand behind us, feel free to stand in front of us. You know, and that's, you know, it's funny and catchy, but really it shouldn't have to be that way. I mean, whether you support the war or not, just support the fact that we thought enough of you to volunteer and go do it for you.
Absolutely, because it's no definite round-trip ticket here.
Oh, no.
And I suppose you did see some people that got killed.
There were a few. Luckily, my unit made it back with no casualties and no injury. I think the worst injury we got was a broken arm from playing basketball. But
all right,
there,
guys.
Yeah, there were units on the same base as us that lost several. In one of the attacks on my base, there were a few killed, and I was able to go to the memorial service for those units, and that's something I would not ever wish on another unit or another family.
And when you talk about families and everything, when you came back here, how has the adjustment been to come back here? I imagine being away and being your own person and coming back has to be a little difficult.
It is very difficult. At first, you know, it's gravy. You know, I was just so happy to be home, just hugging and kissing and just, you know, living
everybody
it up.
Everybody waiting on you hand
yeah,
and foot.
Everybody's, yeah. You know, riding the gravy train on biscuit wheels. But after about 2 months, I'd say is 2 months is probably the average time when after 2 months you're ready to start doing things your own way, which after a year in Iraq is not the normal way. So that's when all the headbutting and the irritation comes. You know, after I'd been home for a couple of months, I went to the DMV, and that was a big, big boo-boo. Just, you know, people screaming and waiting in line, and there's just the constant chaos. I mean, it about drove me insane. You know, there's something as small as somebody walking too slow in Walmart just irritates you so bad because you're so used to the military structure and that lifestyle over there where you're constantly watching everything, constantly on alert, and to just come back where everything's moving faster and so much brighter and louder, and it's very overwhelming.
Yes, and I know you probably know of families that have a difficult time putting the family back together when one of the members of the family have been gone, a husband, wife, mother, father, this type of thing.
Yeah, it's very difficult when especially a man, because, you know, men just have that natural desire to lead and be in charge and just have that look to me for supplies and protection. And to step out of that is one thing, but then to come back and see that your wife is now doing it, I mean, that can be very hard for someone to grasp. And it's difficult to try to find your place to slide back in and find your place to fit in. It's not saying it can't happen, you know, but there's just a lot of understanding and patience that's required on both sides, not just the families.
Sure. And of course, Anna Hightower.
Oh,
we
got to
say a word out for Anna Hightower here because she is the wife of the first sergeant.
Yes, mm-hmm.
Hightower. And what was her role in all this?
She was the pillar of strength.
Yes.
Anna Hightower was the president of our FRG, which is our Family Readiness Group, which is basically, my dad called it the Hens Club. That's where all the wives would get together and, you know, I don't want to say cluck, but, you know, but that's
you
where...
You get the drift.
You get the drift. You know, that's where the families would get together and talk about what they were going through and stuff, and the tears, the sorrow, you know, the pain, the laughter, it all came to Anna, and she took it like a trooper. And, you know, and not only that, she was able to take what they were giving her, reconstruct it, and give it back as strength and motivation. I think I have no idea what the status of our families would have been when we got home if it hadn't been for Anna Hightower.
Well, it's very difficult for families. And, you know, I think part of the thing, too, is the fact that you do have that instant communication with email and Skype and this type of thing. And it has to be difficult because as a guy over there or even as a woman over there, you're not able to help in that situation. And sometimes that has to be a distraction to have to hear that what's happening with whether it's the children or paying bills or these type of things has to cause a lot of stress.
It does. You know, to be 6,000 miles away and hear your water heater just went out and you've got a wife and three children at home, I mean, that can be huge because normally, I mean, you know exactly what to do, but you're 6,000 miles away and you can't do a thing about it. I mean, it's very difficult and straining, and it can be a huge distraction for those people. And Anna Hightower was there always, when something like that would happen, Anna Hightower would get that phone call, and she always had a list of resources, knew who to call, direction. I mean, and I can't imagine the strain that she was going through, being that pillar of strength for everyone and being her own pillar of strength for her and her three children while her husband and my first sergeant was deployed with us.
Absolutely. You know, and that brings me to another point. Certainly, if you know somebody who is deployed out of a family, try to do something for them, whether it's taking the kids to baseball or basketball practice or just dropping some food by so that mom doesn't have to fix dinner one night. All those things really mean a lot.
It does. I heard a lot of stories. Now, me myself not being married or having children, it made it a little easier just having one less thing to worry about. I just had a mom who, you know, if she didn't hear from me every day, she would call the Pentagon to find out if I was okay. But, you know, I heard a lot of stories of, you know, spouses, you know, coming home and their grass being cut and they have no idea who did it. That is such a huge relief. You know, like I said, just to have food drop by, that is a huge relief. And if you don't have the means to give to the soldiers, giving to their family is just as important.
Absolutely. Well, is there anything you'd like to put out there? We're almost finished here. Is there anything you'd like to put out there to all our listeners today?
Yes, I do. I want to thank you for this opportunity to be here and speak on behalf of the unit, but also the biggest thing I could do is reiterate that do not be shy to thank a veteran. You know, we do it as volunteers, but it is so warming to hear that someone appreciates it and to see that someone's taking advantage of it. So please, please take part in what's going on around you. Do not sit back and have no voice in what's going on in your country. We spent years and thousands of lives giving the Iraqis the right to have a voice when we've had it for hundreds of years. Take advantage of it. Use it. Be a part of what's going on around you in your local community and your national government. Let your voice be known. Take part in what's going on and make a change.
Absolutely. You know, Garrett, it has been terrific to have you here today. I know that Veterans Day will be very special for you coming up this Friday, I presume.
Oh, yes. This will be my first Veterans Day being a returned veteran from a foreign war. You know, I'm looking forward to being able to look back and reflect on what's going on, and you know, not only that, but pay homage to my fellow soldiers who have gone and deployed and the ones that have lost their lives in the service.
Would you recommend that somebody that's listening to this go sign up?
I would. I think it's an experience. You know, less than 2% of the American population will ever serve their country. It is a honor to be able to do that and put on that uniform and to say that you have gone and done that and you've put your money where your mouth is, so to speak, and the fact that you love your country to the point you were willing to go fight for it. It's a great honor. There's a lot of experience that at my age, no one else has. You know, no one else my age has gotten to do the things I've got to do. And there's things I've learned that I have no idea where else I would have learned them.
Well, and you are all of 22, is that right?
Yes, ma'am, 22.
All right. This is WLMA right here in Greenwood. We have been talking with Specialist Garrett Andrew Culberson. He is part of Bravo Company. And I want to say bravo to you. Thank you so much for your service. And thank you for coming by and sharing some of these stories with us. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody. This is WLMA right here in Greenwood, South Carolina.